I want to introduce Robin Hadlock-Seely, who has been causing a whole different level of controversy on a different thing here, and that is that we have a very important natural resource, rockweed. I don't know how many tons are around this particular bay, or even Belfast Bay, but it's a huge amount of the ecosystem, and there are a lot of different views on how renewable it is, how it should be cut, and what role it has both in pollution uptake and in the different elements of life stages of different fishes and shellfish and so on. And so Robin's going to give us a presentation on this. And
no further ado here.
So I'm Robin Hadlock-Seely. I'm a marine ecologist at the Shoals Marine Lab, which, if you've never heard of it, is a marine lab that's on an island off of Kittery. We take our vessel out of Portsmouth, which is why I am familiar with that pile in Portsmouth. And I'm also... one of my other hats is co-director of the Rockweed Coalition that's here. It's based in Washington County. And I've been working on this issue for quite a number of years. So I'll just plunge in.
Okay.
And start with one of the videos that we use to introduce the public to this issue and to this concept. And we have at least two members of the seaweed industry here with us tonight, David and David. So
I'm just arriving. I'm just a driver. I'm not here.
Okay.
Anyway, here we go.
Okay, so here we go.
Is there a volume control?
Might be on that. See that clicker up on top there? Use that one. Maybe when I'm pointing.
Then you do there you go. On an open clam flat sometimes. If you picture the rockweed standing up when the tide's in, picture all the clams fat in the water, it makes sense because the rockweed probably slows the current down enough for the clams to settle. Now, we've always thought, too, that when the clams are really tiny like that and maybe digging in, that the rockweed protects them from 100-degree summer weather, from them burning up. It keeps them moist. They don't dry out. And in the wintertime, yeah, I think it helps to protect it from the cold as well. When we're wrinkling, in the wintertime especially, wrinkles seem to come along the bottom of ledges. And under the seaweed, if you lift the seaweed, the wrinkles will be all piled up. The seaweed is what protects the wrinkles in the wintertime. And you always, when you're picking wrinkles, you always lift the seaweed to get the wrinkles. Because
those periwinkles, for those of you who don't know the abbreviation,
under the seaweed. So when you remove the seaweed, there goes your clams, there goes your wrinkles, and I, you know, suspect it's also protecting maybe lobsters, maybe, and scallops fat. And, you know, they're taking it out of here. And what is it doing to the bay? What are we doing to the bay?
So... the other video that we use is to introduce the concept of rockweed as something more than just something flat that people see on the beach. But in the interest of time, I'll skip that video. But it's on the website, rockweedcoalition.org, if anybody wants to see it. So what I talk to people about is whether we have sustainable rockweed harvests in Maine. What do we mean by sustainable? And if it's not sustainable, how do we get there? So you saw an image of the rockweed forest. Most people aren't used to thinking about it at high tide, but at high tide and the water comes up, it becomes this three-dimensional forest, which many organisms depend on. And this is the way most people are used to thinking about rockweed, flat and prone on the shore. But of course, when it goes from low tide to high tide, a basically two-dimensional rockweed forest prostrate on the rocks becomes three-dimensional. So basically what I wanted to cover tonight, if there's time, is sort of the rockweed basics. What is it? What animal species use it? Why is it important? A little bit about the industry, hand versus rake versus machine cutting, impacts of cutting, and then some more about what's actually happening now at the state level for management. The state is treating the rockweed cutting as a fishery. So one of the questions that I am thinking about or raising during this talk is whether it really matters. Does the word fishery matter? Does it matter whether we call it a fishery or whether we call it a harvest or what we call it? The state treats it as a fishery. All right, so we'll plunge into the catalog of which animal species use rockweed. According to Dr. Diane Cowan of the Lobster Conservancy, juvenile lobsters are using rockweed habitat in her juvenile lobster nurseries that she monitors. Not all of them. Many of them are either at the low tide line or slightly below, in which case there wouldn't be rockweed there, but some of them are a little bit higher, and then they're under these boulders, which are covered with a curtain of rockweed. So adult lobsters are using it during nighttime high tides. So in this study, we went along with a light and a diver who had a video camera, and the disturbance of the light and the diver caused the rockweed, the lobsters to come out from the rockweed.
No more skinny dipping at night.
So, of course, shorebirds are using rockweed when it's washed up high on the beach, where it becomes a habitat for small crustaceans and insects that the shorebirds use when they're feeding. They're dropping down out of the sky on their migratory route, either south or north, and then bulking up because they have to make that long, long journey to South America or wherever they're going, and they don't get to stop off for a snack in between. So it's really important that they have the food that's available in the rack line there.
Probably anyone's noticed that it's ever kicked over some of that rack and noticed all the hoppers suddenly frantically. But it's great chow line. All right.
So the shorebirds are also using live rockweed habitat, not just the rack on the beach, but they're actually feeding. So we got purple sandpipers. I wouldn't dare to guess what kind of sandpiper that is. I'd probably get it wrong. But many shorebirds are using the live seaweed as well. And then common eider ducklings. It's very important for the eider ducklings to have that canopy because the amphipods are up in the canopy. The amphipods is what the ducklings need because they're so buoyant, they can't dive down to get the mussels the way the adults can. And those ducklings are such sitting ducks, if you will, for eagles and for herring gull predation. What they're trying to do is get as big as possible as quickly as they can to get to a size where they're not such sitting ducks. So it's really important for them to have that canopy as long as possible and be able to feed on the amphipods up in the canopy. So here's the conservation status of birds that use rockweed. That's a table from a paper that Bill Schlesinger and I published in 2012. The whole gamut from kingfishers, semi-pollinated plovers, great blue herons, osprey, loon, common eider, black ducks, purple sandpipers, but they all have some sort of priority species in terms of the North American shorebird conservation plan. Those purple sandpipers were taken at the Rockland Breakwater, I think. I'm not sure about that. Anyway, black ducks are also, it's really important for black ducks to have the rockweed to feed in, especially in the winter. They feed on fee snails, which is our indigenous periwinkle, Littorina species. And in terms of Cobbs Cook Bay, which is where I'm based, 25% of the wintering black ducks in Maine are in this bay. There they are. Next comes harbor seals and gray seals. They're using the seaweed as haul-outs and for pupping at high tide. This is a very quick video of a seal darting through the rockweed forest in Lubec. I'll play it again so you can see it. It's just a shadow
just
going by.
Right,
yeah. And squid in the intertidal again at night. So lots of things are coming up into the rockweed zone at night where a lot of people don't know they are. So also seabirds. So the Seabird Restoration Project and Friends of Maine Seabird Islands have been taking pictures of seabirds coming back with rockweed actually in their bills with fish. So they've been obviously hunting the fish from that rockweed habitat. Those are mackerel darting through there. There it is in slow-mo. So at last count, we have 35 species of fish that are using the rockweed, including things that are important commercially, like cod and mm-hmm. pollock and herring and winter flounder. And here's a, what I think is, I'm pretty sure that might be an American eel swimming through there. Did you see that?
Up in the intertidal zone?
That's not rockweed, but it's amazing to me to have a film of an American eel in the intertidal zone. So we walk through the rack line and even the dead seaweed that's decomposing and then releasing its nutrients back into the water. Also part of the what's being used. And so basically, rockweed is the basis of a highly complex food web from the top predators like seals and birds and fish all the way down to mice and shrimp and periwinkles. Highly complex, and this was represented in a paper by Schmidt et al. In 2011. Showing the complexity in all the different species that are involved in
They're
this.
They're all interacting then.
Yep. So why do I put harvesting in quotes? I used harvesting in quotes because, to me, going out and cutting a wild species is not harvesting. Harvesting is more thought of as something where you actually plant something like potatoes. You plant it and then you harvest it. So the wild seaweed is not really like that. The word harvesting we're probably stuck with because everybody uses it, but I like to think carefully about the words that we use and what we're implying when we use these words. So here's a scale of the value of resources that DMR tracks from 2013. So seaweed, it's actually seaweed, but rockweed makes up 94% to 96% of the seaweed that's being landed, so you could call it rockweed. Is so far off the chart it doesn't even register at 3 cents a pound. So this is the price per pound. And here's lobster, just for reference. Elvers aren't even on the scale because they would just blow the scale off. And here's what's been happening with the landings and why people like me are concerned about it, because the landings are going up and up and up and up. And in fact, that number of 16.5 million pounds in 2013 has now been revised upward. It's 17 million pounds. So how is it managed? For the whole coast of Maine, until 2013, and even now, there was no real rules except for you had to have a license, and you could only cut it at 16 inches from the rock. So you had to leave 16 inches behind. There was no limit on how much you could take. There was no required biomass assessment. And only the federal lands were off limits in this area. Copscook Bay was a different story because in 2009 there was a lot of pressure to put extra protections on Copscook Bay, in part because the fishermen didn't want it, in part because so many millions of dollars had been invested in conservation land there. But anyway, in 2009 there was a whole different layer of management that was applied to Copscook Bay. And in Copscook Bay, here's a map of Copscook Bay with all the different kinds of protected lands, except for the orange. So federal, the green, the blue is state lands, the green is private conservation groups like MCHT and TNC and Downey Schools Conservancy, and then this orange is the Rockweed No-Cut Registry for private landowners, which was started and has 568 properties on it where the landowners have said, we don't allow it, we don't permit it, we own it. But that's a separate story. All the conservation lands in that law, the Copscook Bay Rockweed Management Law, are protected. So the other parts of that law are that there's a required harvest plan, the sectors are assigned to harvesters, so I don't know if you can see these faint lines, but it's all broken up into sectors assigned to particular harvester or harvester companies. All conservation areas are no-cut areas, and there's a limit on take in the sector of 17% of biomass per year.
And that's in that one area, the Copscook Bay Rockweed Management Area.
Yep.
That itself bear a long telling, but not right now.
Yes.
Wow.
Oh, and so this is a picture of sort of a typical rockweed plant with a 16-inch cut. And you can see that when you cut it at 16 inches, most of the biomass is above the 16 inches, so you're getting most of the biomass of the plant. So a little bit about how it's done. So it's done by hand harvest, actual hand harvest. Somebody goes out there with a knife and puts their hand on the plant and cuts the plant. I don't have any pictures of that, but this is the rake harvest. There's actually a boat here. You can see a little bit, but this is the rake with a sharp tool on it, and you throw it out and you pull it up, and then it gets baled up and it gets taken to a processing place, either on a barge or on a truck. I can stop if there are any questions.
How do you calculate?